Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio Podcast. Welcome to Smoke News Radio 2020 with your host, Jason Brodsky.
Hello, you've tuned in to Smoke News Radio. My name is Jason Brodsky. I'm your host tonight. And let's jump on into the news. See what we found tonight on the Google. From live5news.com, United States teacher sentenced to 14 years for traveling to Russia with cannabis. From CNN, the United States teacher was caught with marijuana in Russia and sentenced harshly. The case has struck some comparisons to WNBA star Brittany Griner's case, but Mark Fogel's family said he isn't getting the same treatment from diplomats. The last moment of freedom for Fogel was caught on surveillance video at a Russian airport. He was heading back to Moscow last August for his 10th year of teaching the children of U.S. diplomats. Airport personnel went through Fogel's bags just minutes before he was detained for carrying cannabis into the country. Fogel's sister, Anne Fogel, said no one in his family has heard his voice since. His family has only gotten letters written in Russian. Quoted, Fogel quotes, and Fogel quotes, he says what he wants in English, someone translates for him, one of his cellmates, and depending on how good their English is, how accurate of a picture we get of what is happening. It's very convoluted, and it's incredibly worrisome because we can't really have an honest conversation. Everything goes through the censors. It's harrowing. Mark Fogel was convicted of smuggling drugs into Russia and sentenced to 14 years in prison in a high-security penal colony last month. His family and lawyers have said he was carrying cannabis for medical reasons to treat chronic back pain. And Fogel quotes, he made a terrible mistake by taking medical marijuana into Russia, but 14 years in a hard labor camp is essentially a death sentence for him. He's 61 years old, and he has a very long history of spinal injury. The circumstances of his detention have some similarities to the arrest of Brittany Griner. However, Griner was declared wrongfully detained by the State Department less than 3 months after her arrest. Mark Fogel's family is still waiting for action to be taken. And quotes, he is wrongfully detained. There's no question about it. This is an outrage, outrageous sentence. State Department spokesman Ned Price said they are continuing to learn more about the circumstances of Mark Fogel's detention. Quoted, we are always weighing these developments against the criteria to determine whether an American is wrongfully held or not. While Mark Fogel was carrying about 20 grams of cannabis, which is much more than Greenier had, his American lawyer said that his sentence can't be explained without there being a political motive. And Fogel quotes, this is a person who has served the American diplomatic community in schools all over the world for well over the majority of his career. I need my president and first lady to stand up for him. He needs to come home. Mark Fogel's family continues to push the department to deem him wrongfully detained. doing so would launch the Biden administration to engage in negotiations to bring him home. Fantastic. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Next, from EssentiallySports.com, NBA basketball, she's not a female, she's a male with bigger hands than LeBron James. Brittany Grenier once revealed hurtful abuses she got from haters. In Las Vegas, Nevada, Brittany Grenier, 42, and Brianna Image, WNBA star Brittany Grenier once opened up about the abuses she received because of her body. She is undoubtedly one of the best players in the league, and she is also one of the most dominant. NBA superstar LeBron James even compared Grenier to the all-time NBA great Wilt Chamberlain. He said that Grenier was as dominant as Wilt, and her towering frame has a lot to do with her dominance, but it was not always praises and compliments. Over the years, Grenier has received a fair bit of hurtful comments because of her size. However, Grenier is very comfortable with her body, and the WNBA star worked with ESPN Magazine's 2015 body issue. She spoke about her body and said that she would describe her as athletically lanky. Grenier also said she is comfortable with her body and doesn't mind putting it on display. She also admitted that she likes the fact that she is unique and said that the world would be boring if everyone looked the same. Also, she said she is sure the body issue photos will receive critical comments from a lot of people. Brittany Grenier, on the hate she received over her physical appearance, Grenier then talked about the hurtful comments she has received and heard from people. She said, "People are either going to accept me for who I am or they're not. I don't know what people think I'm hiding. I've heard, oh, she's not a female, she's a male." The Phoenix Mercury star then discussed that she gets a lot of stares because of her 6'8" frame. She said that she thinks her feet are bigger than NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Grenier also said she has bigger hands than LeBron James. Grenier added that she would feel like she is on display at a museum 24/7 because of all the stares she gets. The two-time Olympic gold medalist also spoke about her growth spurt in high school, which saw her go from 6 foot to 6'7". She then grew another inch in college. Grenier said she had to go through enormous knee pain because of the growth spurt. Grenier said that her sudden growth spurt made her a bit awkward, even though she had always been athletic. Also, she revealed that her coordination was bad when she first started playing basketball. Not just her hands bigger than James, but her wingspan is also bigger than the Los Angeles Lakers star. It's also bigger than the Greek freak Giannis Antetokounmpo. Interestingly, she once claimed that she could be NBA superstar DeMarcus Cousins in a one-on-one game. Next, from Smoke News Radio, from Reuters.com, read to you by Jason Brodsky, Malaysia aims to learn from Thailand and push for medical use of cannabis. Malaysia plans to learn from the cannabis policy of neighboring Thailand in its efforts to legalize use of the drug for medical purposes, a health minister official said on Wednesday, in a country where possession can bring the death penalty now. The comments came after the Thai health minister said he would meet his Malaysian counterpart during a meeting of APEC health ministers next week, where Thailand will showcase its work in legalizing medical marijuana, with a tradition of using cannabis to calm pain and fatigue. Thailand legalized medical marijuana in 2018, becoming in June the first Asian nation to decriminalize cultivation of marijuana and its consumption in food and drink. The Malaysian health official told Reuters on a condition of anonymity, "We are developing our own framework for the usage of cannabis for medical purposes and want to learn from Thailand." The Malaysian government was interested in learning from Thailand's framework for medical use, he added. "The cultivation and recreational use of marijuana is now illegal in Malaysia, and possession of more than 200 grams, that's 7 ounces, of the drug entails a mandatory death sentence." But Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin has said the import and use of medical marijuana under a doctor's prescription is permissible if it is registered and licensed with the Drug Control Authority. In April, Khairi said the government welcomed clinical studies for the medical use of cannabinol, a chemical in cannabis that does not impart a high to users. Last month, state news agency Bernama said the health ministry aimed to start registering some cannabinol products next year after studying their safety. Although approval for cultivation is still far off, there was no immediate comment from Malaysia's law minister. Thai Public Health Minister Anuntin Charnvirakul, the main driver behind his country's legalization of cannabis for medical purposes, estimates the industry could be worth more than $3 billion within 5 years. He told a news conference in Bangkok, "Topics of discussion will be on how to jointly move forward this kind of policy in order to create benefits economically and medically. We want everyone to recognize the property of this cannabis plant. The more people are interested in this field, the more development and research it will create." Thailand has said its cannabis policy covers medical and health purposes, but not recreational use, although hastily issued laws have created space for such uses. Okay, continue on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. The Nation Online NG.net. 20 Ghanaian fishermen jailed for importing marijuana. The Federal High Court sitting in Lagos has sentenced 20 Ghanaian fishermen to 1 year imprisonment for trafficking marijuana, popularly called cannabis sativa, from Ghana to Nigeria. Justice Nicholas Oyebo convicted the men following their plea of guilty to a 2-count charge of conspiracy and unlawful transportation of 14 kilograms of the substance filed against them by the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency. Owen said the offense contravenes sections 11B and 14B of the National Drug Law Enforcement Agency Act of 2004. Following their plea, their counsel, Mr. Uke Okoronkwo, made an allocutus. Praying for leniency. He said the defendants were engaged by a purported customer who did not tell them the content of the bags they carried on their boat. Uche prayed the court to consider the option of a fine instead of custodial sentence. Oyebo, after confirming from the prosecution that the convicts had no previous conviction record, sentenced them to 1 year imprisonment each. The judge also ordered that the period of convict sentence commence from the date of their arrest in January. The judge, however, ordered the convicts to pay the sum of N50 each in place of the sentence. He forfeited to the Nigerian government the boat used in smuggling the banned substance. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. From finance.yahoo.com, Allied Corp successfully ships 3,400 kilograms, the largest international cannabis shipment in history. Not legal. In Kelowna, British Columbia, Allied Corp is pleased to announce that it has shipped 3,400 kilograms of medical cannabis from Colombia to an international market as a historic milestone. This record-breaking shipment represents the world's largest known legal cannabis export to date. In June 2022, Allied was the first company to export dried cannabis from Colombia. Allied shipments of 300 kilograms, 200 kilograms, 2,000 kilograms, and 3,000 kilograms have shown an established supply chain at commercial scale. Allied's clients and supply channel partners span 5 world continents that include Australia, Europe, Asia, South America, and North America. Allied's relationship with international partners are based on sustainable long-term agreements that were designed with the Allied Inside supply chain in mind. In April, Colombia enacted new legislation allowing for legal export of dried cannabis products to Colombia. And immediately, Allied submitted several applications for export. After many levels of regulatory inspections, analysis, discussions, and questions, Allied's first export of near 300 kilograms shipped in June, the second shipment in July, and in early August, near 2,000 kilograms. Now the world's largest shipment of 3,400 kilograms in August. Quoted, the logistics management that it took to get over 7,500 pounds of cannabis approved for export and onto a plane was no easy feat. Since June, Allied has already shipped over one-third of the volume that the entire country of Canada exported in 2020. About 2 weeks have passed since our last press release saying that we'll be sending 1,500 kilograms every week. This 3,400 kilograms show that we are achieving the company's goals and aspirations. We are continuing to scale as each month passes, particularly as we enter our high THC harvest within the month of September. Quotes Chalem Hughes, the CEO and chairman of the Allied Board. Allied's multiple strains in the production pipeline include over 15,000 THC plants created for multiple batches to fulfill the 2020 quota. The Allied THC flower harvest will be available for sale in or around September. Next, from jpost.com, Jerusalem Post. Israeli medical cannabis company receives European export certification. The EU GMP certification is essential in order to create, export, and market any type of medicine in Europe, including medical cannabis. Israel's oldest medical cannabis company, Tikkun Olam, received an EU GMP certificate on Monday, allows it to export medical cannabis to Europe. Following its license approval, Tikkun Olam is now able to follow through on a deal made with German pharmaceutical company Fete Pharma. As part of the deal, the company will export medical cannabis to Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Tikkun Olam intends to sign further deals now that it has the EU GMP Good Manufacturing Practice certification. Inside the Tikkun Olam Cannabit, the Tikkun Olam CEO Avi Noam Sapir quotes, "The creation and export of medical cannabis that is based on Israeli research to Europe is a realization of the, quote, from Israel will come medicine vision." Quoting, "Receiving the prestigious European certificate is the most important strategic move for the company, as well as a breakthrough for Tikkun Olam and the Israeli cannabis industry." Quoted, "This is the first and essential step for us to become a global research-based pharmaceutical company, and I am happy and excited to begin global work and compete in more markets with our innovative and unique products." You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, and founder of NewMarijuana.org from 20 years ago. From the NYDailyNews.com, okay, not from them. Here we go. A pair of unlicensed Manhattan marijuana outlets targeted by the state are bracing for a weed war as New York prepares to tightly regulate the potentially lucrative pot-selling business. The Empire Cannabis Clubs were ordered in a letter from the State Office of Cannabis Management to cease their dealings with its members, although an attorney representing the business insists they were operating fully under the law. Lawyer Steve Zissou quotes, "Do I expect to go to war? Yeah, I do, and we're ready for a fight." The letter sent to Empire Cannabis was also sent to 65 other weed purveyors across the New York State, including at least 14 New York City operations. It cited so-called gifting, where consumers purchase a membership in a club and are then provided cannabis as part of the sale. But that number seems to be a drop in the bucket of the universe of openly operating weed-selling operations that have sprouted across the city and are run out of storefronts and trucks. Marijuana is being sold in a gray market that offers weed to people who make donations to sellers or buy memberships in businesses like the Empire Cannabis Club. Another operation, Paint Puff and Peace, received letters at four stores in Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens. Employees at a fifth shop in Frederick Douglass Boulevard gave a Daily News reporter the boot when he asked about the notes. Store employee quoted, "We don't know anything about that. We have no comment." The state legalized marijuana in March 21. Under the statute, sales remain illegal until the state establishes regulations. Longtime pot lawyer Stanley Cohen says the letters sent to cannabis sellers mean the gray market businesses or those operating without an official state license may resist in court, but he sees their days are numbered. To adhere to the state's demands could trigger huge fines. Cohen quotes, "It's really the beginning of the end. I don't know what the defense is. There's been very public and strict notice. I assume that they will lose in state court, in appellate court, and they don't have standing to go into federal court because it's a state issue." On August 25th, the state opened the portal to allow people to apply for licenses to open retail pot outlets, a process that is supposed to be weighted towards applicants with a prior marijuana conviction or those otherwise harmed by the war on drugs. This out disputes the idea that the Empire Clubs, which provide less than 3 ounces per transaction to customers who buy a membership rather than the weed itself, is somehow in violation of state legislation created with the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act. Cannabis club members can purchase a $35 monthly membership or a $15 daily pass, and the club's locations in Chelsea and the Lower East Side provide the small amount of weed legally allowed under the law, says Cizal. Via membership fees means there is no compensation for the transfer of cannabis, quotes Zissou. Quoting, "We are running the classiest operation in Manhattan. This should be a model for others. Under the new law, the legislature carved out a place for the safe haven of not-for-profit clubs like Empire." State officials disagreed in the letter earlier this year ordering the cannabis clubs to, quote, "cease any and all illegal activity immediately," tagging on the threat that the clubs forfeit a shot at a legitimate cannabis license if they don't comply. Other businesses are more blatantly, quote, gifting, calling the pot a gift and the cash paid as a donation. Still, other spots that may be operating legally also receive letters. One of those is Brooklyn Smokes, which has had an outlet in the Mill Basin for 10 years and another in Bay Ridge for about a year. Co-owner Cameron Kakuk said the shop sell only federally approved CBD products, which are legal. He and his partners have been trying through lawyers the letter removed. Quoting, "We don't do any of this illegal gray area nonsense. It's very clear. We're not hiding anything. The letter didn't scare us because we haven't done anything wrong, and we have the proof." Aaron Gittleman, spokesman for the Office of Cannabis Management, said there was no sanctioned gray market in New York State simply because the laws are black and white. Quoting, "Simply put, you need a license to sell cannabis in New York. If you do not have one, you are not selling cannabis legally," he told the news. "There are no exceptions." Quoting, "The Office of Cannabis Management implores all illegal store operators, including stores pretending to be legal operations, to stop selling cannabis products immediately or risk facing additional consequences." But Zissou said the two Manhattan outlets would continue to stay open and were planning to apply for a retail license as well. Thank you. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, all rooted from the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative of 2016. We have next from registerguard.com, water use and waste violations issued to illegal marijuana grow property owners. Lane County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Thomas Speldrick said Monday the operation was one of the largest marijuana farm raids the department has had. He thinks there are many more in the area people are not aware of. The state and county officials issued violation notices to property owners at large-scale illegal marijuana operation raided west of Junction City, which was pumping water from a pond using electricity and placing buildings without permits. The sheriff quotes, "As these operations are found and get some publicity, certainly I think that folks here are going to become more aware that we do have a problem in our county. It just maybe has not been highlighted yet." The farm was raided August 24th on private property. Police estimated the farm to have around 32 greenhouses and close to 9,000 marijuana plants were seized. The sheriff's office said the primary operator, Julian Marin, 27-year-old, was cited with illegal marijuana manufacturing but not arrested. Several migrant workers believed to be trafficked were also at the site living in deplorable conditions, Speldrick says. The operation was funded by an organized crime group in Mexico, according to Speldrick. Police are still investigating whether the property owners will be given any criminal charges or fines. The operation appeared to have been there since the start of the summer growing season, says Spaldrick. Reached by phone Thursday, a property owner who declined to provide a name said they were not aware it would be an illegal operation before leasing the area to the growers. On the day of the raid, Lane and Linn County's water master, Lenaya Blakely, responded a few hours after police issued the property owners a violation notice operation, which was pumping from a pond without a permit. The notice means the landlords could be fined if there is any more illegal water use. Quoting, that's the first step towards potentially assessing fines in the future. Oregon legislature, Blakely's office is looking at how much water was taken, but she said it would be a very rough estimate because there was no measurement device at the intake. Blakely said she did not see lines going to other properties from the pond. The pond had a water use permit for a neighboring property, according to Mike McCord, the Northwest Regional Manager of the state's Water Resources Department. Water masters can issue a notice to the person running the operation within 5 days after a raid, but in this case, the operator was not reached in time or present when Blakely arrives, McCord says. There was also a well on the property connected to the grow. It was not used yet, McCord says. Lane County's Code Compliance Division issued a notice for 6 violations on August 29th to property owners, which include solid waste accumulation, electrical and plumbing work without building approvals, greenhouses placed without land use or building approvals, more than the allowed number of campsites in an exclusive farm use zone, development of a floodplain area without land use approval, commercial marijuana production without approval. The notice requires owners to remove the waste and deal with other violations by the end of September, and they could receive fines up to $2,500 per day if they don't comply. Unclear if fertilizers hurt environment. One aspect of the grow that hasn't been determined is whether there were any substantial environmental impacts from fertilizers or herbicides at the site. Representatives for Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Agriculture said they were not involved in the Junction City site response and did not investigate whether fertilizers or herbicides were used, which could have damaged the local waterways. The chemicals are often used in large quantities at large-scale marijuana grows and can be devastating to water sources and wildlife in the form of runoff. The grow near Junction City was in the Long Tom River watershed. Jed Cowell, a fish biologist for the Long Tom Watershed Council, said he was concerned about the possibility of polluted runoff and how it could affect the water levels. Quoting, it's really frustrating. There's a lot of agriculture in the Long Tom, and everybody follows the rules and only uses the water they're supposed to. and only uses pesticides that are permitted. And then these people are trying to do it black market. Kyle noted that he had been aware of the illegal grow for a few months and that a neighboring property is reserved for wetland protection and enhancement. The environmental effects and overuse of water have also been observed by police. In southern Oregon, where growing conditions are better and large-scale grows are more common, sheriff's offices told the Register Guard they have seen many cases where water sources are ruined and damage the local vegetation and wildlife. Public information officer for the Jackson County Sheriff's Office quotes, "The fertilizers can really destroy those water sources," says Aaron Lewis. "The problem with it is they have to use a lot of fertilizer for these plants to flower in a relatively quick time frame. So there's a lot of runoff, and that's what we've noticed. In some cases, an uninvolved property owner will have their water sucked dry by the illegal grows since the wells are not designed to support that amount of water usage." Lewis quotes, "We've had a lot of citizen complaints in the neighboring areas on some of these grows that their wells are losing flow." Written by Lewis Cross from the RegisterGuard.com. All right. Next on Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky, from the IndyStar.com, major decision in Hamilton County weed case led Indy Crime Lab to stop cannabis. The Marion County's Crime Lab's decision to stop testing evidence believed to be marijuana stems from an Indiana Court of Appeals opinion from earlier this year that overturned a woman's marijuana conviction in Hamilton County because of a lack of evidence. An internal memo sent by the crime lab to county attorneys directly references the appeals court's review of the criminal case State versus Fadige as the justification for why it was no longer performing testing on cannabis or providing its chemists to testify that evidence is marijuana. The memo, which August 8th, obtained by Indy Star, was sent to the Marion County's Prosecutor's Office and the Marion County's Public Defender Agency. It says the holds could last, quote, several months while the lab upgrades its testing equipment to meet the new evidence standards set by the appeals court opinion and a law change from 2019 that legalized hemp with a THC concentration of less than 0.3%. February 20, Carmel police were sent to a residence to check on a report of a disturbance. The owners of the residence let the officer inside, and one of the first things the officer noticed was, quote, the odor of burnt hemp or marijuana coming from a nearby bedroom. The officer knocked on the bedroom door, and a woman came out. She asked the officer if they could speak in the kitchen, which was down the hallway. After that, the officer requested and received a search warrant for the woman's room. The opinion states two officers recovered evidence of cannabis products and paraphernalia, including a glass smoking pipe, quote, containing burnt plant material, and a package of yellow hard candy that had the writing, quote, THC-infused hard drops on the outside. The woman was arrested and charged with two misdemeanors of possession of marijuana and a misdemeanor of possession of paraphernalia. At trial, the officer entered the home, testified she smelled the odor of burnt marijuana coming from the bedroom, but the officer also testified that there are two kinds of cannabis plant. Quote, one is legal and one is not legal. She hadn't been trained to differentiate between the smell of burnt hemp, the legal kind of cannabis, and the smell of burnt marijuana, she says. The officer quotes, the difference in the legality is the THC content, which is why we send it to the lab that is managed by Indiana State Police, which has the ability to determine THC levels. Carmel police found through their own analysis that the products contained THC, but they weren't equipped to determine how much THC. The authorities didn't send the material for further testing because, quote, the level of the crimes charged did not justify the expense of additional testing. According to the testimony in the case, prosecutors also submitted as evidence the packaging of the cannabis products they recovered from the scene, some of which said their contents contained THC. The woman was found guilty of all three charges. Through the judge in the case merged the two possession charges at her sentencing. But when she appealed, the Court of Appeal judges said there were various issues with the evidence presented against her. Odor, packaging, not enough for a conviction. The Carmel police officials involved in the case, quote, were unequivocal in their testimony that they had no way to distinguish any of the substances between hemp and marijuana absent a test for the percent concentration of THC, quotes Judge Paul D. Mathias, who wrote in the opinion. Mathias also wrote the cannabis products packaging wasn't enough either because some of it didn't provide, quote, a detailed analysis of the product's chemical compositions. Quoting, indeed, there is no Indiana or federally regulated labeling on these products at all for a conspicuous reason. They're wholly illegal in both jurisdictions, Mathias wrote. Because of that, statements on the packaging couldn't be considered reliably accurate enough to ground a conviction. Prosecutors don't need to show exactly how much THC a product contains, Mathias wrote, but they do need to at least show it has a THC concentration of more than 0.3%. Quoting, if the state seeks to obtain a conviction under that statute, it is entirely the state's burden to prove that the prescribed substance was in fact in the defendant's possession. Mathias and two other judges who reviewed the case reversed her misdemeanor possession conviction, but upheld the misdemeanor paraphernalia conviction. Marion County prosecutor Ryan Mears told Indy Star that he believes the Indiana Supreme Court will have to weigh in to provide final guidance. Joel Shum, a law professor at the Indiana University Robert Kinney School of Law, pointed IndyStar to a 2021 state Supreme Court decision that supported police's power to rely on odor to justify a search warrant request if, quote, the odor is one sufficiently distinctive to identify a forbidden substance. But the Court of Appeals' opinion is already forcing criminal justice leaders in Marion County to figure out a new path forward for investigating and prosecuting marijuana-related crimes, a challenge brought into sharp relief by the Crime Lab's decision to pull out of marijuana testing. Shum told the Indy Star, the Court of Appeals case and Crime Lab memo would make it difficult for the state to prove a pending case. Written by court reporter Johnny Magdaleno on the Indy Star. All right. Hope you guys are enjoying this. You're listening to Smoke News Radio with your host, Jason Brodsky. Let me see, I can pull this up real quick here. Yeah. Okay, next, from the DenverChannel.com, I think I'm online. There it is. There I am. Okay. Let's see, let's get a little into this one in a few minutes. From the DenverChannel.com, quoted, there's a real attack on the industry. Medical marijuana sales continue to drop in Colorado. Colorado's Department of Revenue says medical marijuana sales are continuing to drop. Experts are worried about people with health conditions having to access the treatment they need. They say patients are paying more in taxes for similar products at recreational facilities. Truman Bradley quotes, this is the lowest they've been since the legalization of recreational, and I'm very worried. Worried is an understatement for Truman Bradley, executive director of Marijuana Industry Group, a trade association in Colorado that provides support for marijuana-related businesses. He believes in safe access to clean products for all Coloradans and its visitors. According to the Colorado Department of Revenue, medical marijuana sales in the state for June 22 were $19 million, down from $34 million in June 21, a 44% drop. Bradley believes the industry is suffering for a number of reasons, quoting, on the medical side, some very strict purchase limits came in, you know, for pharmaceuticals. Patients can get up to 1 month's supply, but for medical cannabis, purchase limits for folks who are immunocompromised or disabled, this is a real problem. Bradley says this is making some patients resort to buying recreational marijuana, which costs more due to the higher tax base and pushes some medical marijuana businesses to shut their doors. Buddy Boy Dispensaries and Mile High Green Cross closed their locations over the last few months. The city of Denver says it's seen a decline in people applying for medical marijuana license over the last 5 years, citing similar reasons. Spokesman for Denver Excise and Licenses, Eric Escuerdo, quotes, "We think it might be just people don't want to go through the hassle of getting their marijuana card, medical marijuana card. They'd rather just walk down the street and go to a recreational dispensary." Statistics from Denver's annual marijuana report show the city had 731 actively licensed marijuana businesses in January 2014. There are currently 433 actively licensed marijuana businesses as of January 2022. Quoting, "I think what some people are really wondering is if there's an oversaturation of the marijuana market in Denver. We have a lot of stores, whether it be medical or recreational." Bradley says the recreational industry is also taking a hit. Quoting, "Recreational sales are a significant portion of the tax revenue, but recreational sales are down 20% as well. There's a real attack on the industry." Bradley says things like inflation and rising taxes are contributing to that. He's hopeful the industry will make an upward trend before things get worse. Denver 7 reached out to the Colorado Medical Enforcement Division, which regulates medical and retail marijuana industries in the state, to see what they have to say about the decline in medical sales and if there's anything that can be done to stop the decline from happening. The spokesman says the division does not have anything to contribute at this time. Okay, thank you guys for listening to Smoke News Radio. Jason Brodsky, your host, who is also a cancer survivor. And, I mean, I don't want to get a medical card because they say you cannot purchase firearms. And it leaves a trail. All right, have a wonderful night. And we got Jack Johnson for you. And he'll tell you about his news in his alternate universe that hopefully is not the Ukrainian nuclear power plant news. Here we go.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's sight. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight. Who's the one to decide that it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight? Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear, so baby, close your ears on the news tonight, on the news tonight. The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eye. Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see,